the foreword in the book, was it Sir Ben Kingsley
who did the foreword? Yes, Sir Ben Kingsley. Yeah, he called me, and we met at my daughter's house. He's the most unbelievable, wonderful human being I have ever met. He's a highlight of my life, the hour together. He is a gem. He is even nicer in person. He's great as an actor, but as a person, I have never met anybody better.
Did he say to you, Tova, I'd like to contribute a foreword to your book?
No, I asked him.
Oh, yeah.
I have chutzpah. Well, you know, I thought that after spending an hour together, and it was such a good hour, and he said to me, if I ever make another Holocaust film, I'm going to dedicate it to you. And he said such nice things about me that my son he taped it, you know, a little tape. So I thought, I'll take a chance. And he was so wonderful, and he did it right away.
Love it. Love it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Allison Interviews podcast. This is part two of my interview with Holocaust survivor Tova Friedman, where we discuss her amazing, meaningful, beautiful new memoir, The Daughter of Auschwitz. And in part two of this episode with Tova Friedman, we go into a topic that I think is extremely important. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to speak with Tova and share her story with my listeners and my viewers. And that is the journey of human resilience. And what's so phenomenally interesting to me is that no matter what a human being goes through, we as human beings have the ability to bounce back, to be resilient, to overcome, and to reinvent ourselves. And you would think that the horrors of the Holocaust and the horrors of being in Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp as a small child would completely do somebody in, right? That it would break your spirit. There's nowhere to go from there. You're just traumatized, and there's no light at the end of the tunnel, but that isn't so. And Tova is a living example of this. She went on to, if you listen to part one of the episode, she went on to eventually emigrate to the United States, to New York City, where a lot of Eastern European Jewish people emigrated to New York through Ellis Island. At that point in time, she was very fortunate to meet her husband-to-be when she was just a teenager, and she finished school, she got married, she raised four beautiful children, she's got a bunch of grandchildren, and she now goes around speaking and writing and doing all of this advocacy work. And on top of that, she is a therapist, and she's 84 years old, and she's still working full-time. Beyond writing her book and promoting her book, she is a full-time therapist. And one of the things that we discussed, particularly in part two of this episode, is I said to her, you know, you have a lot of strong sense memory. You remember everything from seeing people be killed to the smell of the crematorium when people were gassed and then cremated. I mean, so many things that she took in as a small child, visually, things that she heard, things that she smelled. I mean, everything, you name it. And I said, how do you process that trauma? Is it a process every day? What exactly do you do? And she explains in this part of the interview exactly how she overcame, how she has processed this trauma over the period of her adult life, and how she helps other people as a therapist, how she helps her clients process different kinds of trauma. And one thing that I gained as a beautiful gift from interviewing her is the gift of perspective, right? And we're always trying to get perspective as human beings. But when you speak to somebody like that, it makes you realize that the little things that we go through, the little annoyances and aggravations and stresses that we go through every day, just as everyday people, just pales in comparison to what she went through, right? And I'm not downplaying anybody else's stress or trauma, because it's all relative. But what's wonderful, and it's such a gift, is when you listen to somebody like this, and even just seeing that she's alive and she's thriving and she created a beautiful life for herself, it really does instantly put everything into perspective. And to me, that was a beautiful gift that I got from interviewing her. And I hope that that same gift is passed along to you as you either listen to or watch this podcast, both part one and part two. So if you didn't see or listen to part one of my interview with Tova Friedman, please go back and listen to part one and then go ahead and listen to part two, because it's both are equally important, but very, very different, the things that we cover in part one and part two. You can also find Tova at Tova Friedman on TikTok. Her grandson helped her set up her TikTok account, and she's got tons of followers. She's like killing it on TikTok. And what's great is that she discusses her experience. She discusses World War II, the Holocaust, her time in Auschwitz-Birkenau, but she does it in small digestible videos where she actually answers questions from fellow TikTok users. And the reason I think her TikTok account is so great is because she's able to answer these questions to a whole new generation of young people who maybe don't know as much about this period in history as they should or could. And I think that this is something that we can never forget. So go to TikTok and follow her at Tova Friedman. Pick up a copy of her memoir, The Daughter of Auschwitz. It is a hell of a journey and it will change you forever. So sit back, relax, and listen to part two of my episode with Ms. Tova Friedman.
So obviously your parents were Jewish, because you're Jewish by origin. Were they religious, and what were their beliefs in God? What was their belief system, your parents?
Well, my mother was very religious. She came from a religious family. Mm-hmm. My father was what we would call conservative. I don't know if you know the difference.
Yes, yes.
But a little bit more than more religious. But after the war, my mother had complete doubts. She couldn't. She lost 150 people, and they were all very religious. They were ultra. They were all rabbis and scholars, and she thought that if God can take, and she had nobody left, not a single cousin was left, then why should she be so Jewish? But she did stay Jewish till her death, but without a passion. She did it by habit. There was this passion of, you know, going to the temple and all that.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. Have you ever seen the movie, Oh God, with George Burns?
Yeah. Very funny, right? Yeah.
It's one of my favorite movies. I think it's from the 70s. And there's one point where John Denver says to George Burns, who plays God, he says, how can you permit the suffering that goes on in the world? And God says, how can I permit the suffering? I don't permit the suffering. You do. He said, I gave you a world and everything in it. You can love and cherish each other, or you could kill each other. Well, and that really spoke to me. Because I think that there is a higher power, there is an energy source, there is a God, but I feel that once you put free will into the mix, people have the choice to follow a path of love or fear. And I really believe that a lot of the things that go on this planet are not because there's no God, but because we were given the gift of free will, and sometimes it doesn't go right.
I agree with you. And that's why I have good days and bad days, where I believe in God and days when I don't believe in God. But the days when I do, I see the good stuff that's happening, especially to me personally.
Right.
And I say to myself, it isn't he who put me into Auschwitz. It's other people, because he gave them the same free will he gave me. But I chose this and they chose the other.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a puzzle.
What's interesting to me is that if you don't believe in miracles, that would be like an oxymoron to me, because your life is a miracle.
No, I do. I do.
Right. The fact that you're 84 years old, and the fact that you lived through being in a ghetto, being in the worst concentration camp, being malnourished at a time when your body needs that nutrition to grow and develop and thrive. And the fact that there were so many quote unquote opportunities for your life to end and it didn't.
Yeah. Right. And even after the war, there were all kinds of miracles. I had cancer and I came out fine, right? 25 years ago. You know, I can look at the miracles all along. There was something there that I'm meant to be here. And that's why I wrote the book.
Right. That makes so much sense.
Yeah. And I did it during COVID, during the worst time.
Right. But maybe it made you slow down and realize that you needed to write a book.
Right. And I did it with somebody in London whom I didn't see much. So okay. We were co-writers, and he's completely different. He is a war correspondent, and he's not Jewish.
Oh, wow.
And we sort of worked it out back and forth. When I wrote, he was sleeping. When he wrote, I was sleeping. So, you know, we sort of, but we got through it.
And his name is Malcolm Brabant?
Yeah, he is a war correspondent for PBS. He lives in London.
And how did the book come about? Did somebody approach you, or did you just simply start writing and then approach?
No. Well, I started many, many times, but I didn't have the discipline. I have lots of papers I wrote. I did one chapter, but what happened? I was in Poland, 75th anniversary of liberation of Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. I went there with my daughter-in-law for a week, and he was there from England. And he did a short documentary on me for PBS, which I liked very much.
Okay.
It was very well done. Not too much, not just right, you know. Mm-hmm. And then about a year later, he called me and he said, you know, maybe we should try a book together. I said, yeah, but you were so far away. You have to be here so I could tell you about my life. He said, well, I can't. The government wouldn't let them in, you know, COVID. It wouldn't let anybody out and in. So we did it long distance.
And I guess, did you use Zoom? I mean, there's so much technology now.
Yeah, but you know, you can, but it's just not the same.
Yeah.
It's not like I can Zoom for like a half hour and then I go about my business and I say, oh, I forgot to tell him that. It's not like It's not like somebody you can say, oh, let's have another coffee next tomorrow. I forgot something today. I've got a whole thing for you to tell you. We'll do it tomorrow. It's different.
Okay. But yet you guys created a beautiful, I mean, I have to tell, I said to my mother, because she kept saying, are you almost done with the book? I want to read it next. And I said, this is an experience. You know, buckle up, because this is an experience. You will experience everything right along with Tova. And then you'll experience the triumph of her emigrating to the United States, meeting her future husband when she was a teenager, and building a beautiful life and a beautiful family. And it's really, you'll never forget this book. So I'm actually going to give it to her today to start reading. There's something important I want to ask you. Since the war started when you were just a toddler, what was your memory? Because laughter is such an important part of life. When did you first laugh? When is the first time you laughed? Like a real laugh where something is just so funny and you're so happy.
I want to tell you something. I'm not a big laugh. I don't laugh too much.
Okay.
So I decided I have to learn to laugh. So I took a stand-up comedy class.
Oh, wow.
For 7 weeks.
Okay.
And I failed it.
Oh.
He said to me, you know, don't give up your day job. You can't find anything funny in your childhood. So I don't think it's so good. He didn't know my background at all.
Okay.
But laughter has become very important, especially if you do therapy,
mm-hmm.
sit together, and it's so difficult sometimes. So I somehow find levity, something that you can sort of laugh at, or simple things like that. like saying, oh, you're all dressed up today. Are you going somewhere? And the person would say, no, I'm coming to you. I said, well, I'm really honored. I never saw you so clean, you know, something that's comes out funny, not insulting or anything, really funny. So I try very hard to see the funny side of things, because otherwise life is it's really too hard.
Yeah.
Too hard.
Don't you find and you it? Have you have a lot of strong sensed memory, where you speak in the book about to this day you can recall a lot of the sights, the smells, the sounds. How do you, and I know that you're a clinical social worker, correct? Are you a therapist?
Okay. Yeah.
In counseling yourself, how do you deal with that? How do you process that day to day?
You mean now when I counsel myself now?
When you counsel yourself, yeah. How do you process it and deal with it?
I want to tell you, my husband died 2 years ago after 60 years of marriage. I believe very strongly in self-talk, mm-hmm. very strongly, because I tell my clients, I see you only once a week for 45 or 50 minutes. You live with yourself every day, 24/7. Great chance to do therapy. Find a spot in your house where you're very comfortable and talk to yourself. I use it all the time.
Me too.
Do you? Good.
Yes.
I do meditation every morning.
And what is the meditation that you do each morning?
On my own. I've never taken a class in meditation.
Okay.
Or anything. I just sit like yoga position, mm-hmm. close my eyes, and I say, okay, another challenging day. Make me worthy of the challenge. I don't know to whom I'm talking. Maybe to the wall. I don't know. You know, make me worthy and help me not lose my sense of humor.
Right.
I do this over and over again. And it's a good way to start. It's as good as having a cup of coffee.
Okay.
Just you start the day like that. But I do believe in self-talk a lot. Sometimes I talk out loud and my grandkids say, why are you saying these things? And I say, what do you mean? I say, you're eavesdropping to me. No, you were talking out loud.
I do the same thing. I get busted all the time talking to myself. I've told other people this during interviews because, first of all, it's how I write. It's how I process my thoughts. I talk to myself all the time, and I get caught all the time.
Now you can get away with it because people think you're talking on the phone.
Yes. Wait, let me fix my Bluetooth. Yeah.
So I process a lot of stuff.
Right.
Through my life, when things were just impossible or difficult, or I made mistakes, or mm-hmm. said bad things, and I'm sorry about it, and all that. I process it so that to see whether I can, live with it.
Yeah. What is your advice to somebody who's going through a trauma and they have to rise to the occasion and survive and overcome whatever it is they're going through?
The thing that I think we need most is hope. If you hope, it's sort of a belief that you'll overcome. It'll just take some time. You know, one of my favorite person is Ben Gurion. I don't know if you know, he was the first president of Israel. The very first. He made the country possible. And he used to have a saying that I love. Things that are difficult to accomplish will take some time. Things that are just impossible will just take a little longer. So I have that as part of my mental state. And the people go through trauma and I say, look, you'll have hope that you will overcome this. It'll just take more time than you expect. You may get help than you expect. You may need different things, but it's going to happen eventually. And you just have to be patient. and you have to be there to get it. Right. So you can't do anything terrible to yourself. You have right. to be there to see the change.
Amen. Amen. And tell me in your, from your perspective, the importance of the state of Israel and why it's important that the country remains strong and healthy and democratic.
Well, I was just there 2 weeks ago. It gives you such a fabulously warm feeling in how it's growing and it's how strong it is. I feel protected. When people ask me, can this happen again? I want to say in my head, I don't always say it because it's not politically correct, I don't think it'll happen to the Jews. Israel won't allow it. If there would right. be a massacre somewhere, I mean, just imagine somebody will come to Del Rey where all the Jews were. You will have Israeli troopers mm-hmm. somehow.
Yes.
Like, remember Entebbe?
Who?
Entebbe. Entebbe was a place in Africa. I don't remember where. Well, you were probably not even born yet. I don't know.
Okay.
And they had hostages, Israeli hostages, and nobody could free them. No one. The Israeli troopers came and freed them.
Okay. You know? Interesting. Because we became organized as a people.
Because yeah. they are used to that. Because we yeah. have been... We have been victimized throughout history.
Right.
And I think people have started saying no more. No, never again. No victimization. We're not allowing it. And I think that Israel is probably will find a way to stop anything like that that could possibly right. happen.
So I usually ask people a certain question, and the question that I usually ask people is, if you could travel back in time and change one famous historical event, where would you go and what would you attempt to change?
I would stop Kristallnacht.
Okay.
Kristallnacht?
Yes, the Night of Broken Glass.
Exactly.
Can you explain what that is for people who don't know?
Well, if you give me the exact date, I think it's 1938. November 9th could be, I hope I'm not wrong. You can look it up.
I'll look it up.
And Hitler sent all his hoodlums, I call them, because that's what they were, with clubs and guns, and went all through Germany and Poland and all over, destroying the temples, breaking all the glass, stores, right. temples, private homes, and killed anybody who was in the way. It wasn't, I don't think, to kill people, but if you happen to be in a building, you die. And that was the first time, one of the first times, that he showed his power, international power.
Okay.
And that was the time when she should have been stopped. I go back to history, mm-hmm. and I would get all the nations together, and mm-hmm. say, you cannot just go and break everybody's synagogue or everybody's, well, didn't do the churches, but it's the same kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And you are going now to be no chancellor any longer. You're too dangerous.
Perfect. That's a flawless answer. And what do you think you came into this life and into this incarnation as Tova Friedman to learn? And what do you think you came here to teach?
I came to learn that you can overcome. Now, I never thought of it before because I don't believe in incarnation. So the idea, but if I were to believe in incarnation and if I were to believe that I came here for a purpose, mm-hmm. it would be that one can overcome a lot with help from others. I had therapy.
Right.
I was lucky with my family and my husband and my children and my job. I'm still working. So you can overcome. You can heal yourself. That's what I learned about myself. And that's what I would like to teach.
Okay.
Same exact thing. And that's why I'm a therapist, because I believe in hope and overcoming. And you could overcome a lot of pain and come out on the other side cleansed, healthier.
Beautiful.
Do that.
Have you suffered any long-term health effects from the malnutrition and the effects of what you went through as a small child, or did you not suffer any long-term?
Who knows? I had cancer 24 years ago. I don't know if that's, I had TB, TB, that's what I...
Tuberculosis.
Years ago. But I seem to have come out the other side. And I'm
and you're good.
And I'm okay.
Yeah. Since the Queen of England just passed, it was brought to my attention this morning, and I didn't know this. It was an article that was sent my way, that the royal family actually helped a lot of Jewish people during World War II. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. But I'm very happy to hear it.
Yeah, she look into it, because I was surprised myself. I actually didn't know that. I didn't know that they helped. I think they saved quite a lot of Jewish people. They helped. I don't remember if it was refugees, people that were escaping the Nazi regime, but definitely look into it, because it's quite interesting.
Wonderful to hear. I was just in the palace 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that your first time there?
I went to England, to London for the book.
Okay.
So I went there for what is it called when you go to promote the book?
And
when I had some spare time, I, my daughter, Taya, and my grandson, Aaron, went to the palace, and we had we saw the changing of the guards. We did a lot of, I'm so glad we were there at the time before the queen died.
Yeah, absolutely. And the foreword in the book, was it Sir Ben Kingsley who did the foreword?
Sir Ben Kingsley, he called me, and we met at my daughter's house. He's the most unbelievable, wonderful human being I have ever met. He's a highlight of my life, the 1 hour together. He
That's
is
beautiful.
A gem. He is even nicer in person. He's great as an actor, but as a person, I have never met anybody better.
Did he say to you, Tova, I'd like to contribute a foreword to your book?
No, I asked him.
Oh, yeah.
I have chutzpah. Well, I thought that... I thought that after spending an hour together, and it was such a good hour, and he said to me, if I ever make another Holocaust film, I'm going to dedicate it to you. And he said such nice things about me that my son he taped it, a little tape. So I thought, I'll take a chance. And he was so wonderful, and he did it right away.
Love it. And your grandson created a TikTok account for you, and you're a big hit.
Aaron Goodman put his name on.
So the TikTok is at Tova Friedman, and you answer a lot of questions for you.
Yeah, I answer questions. I also have a website. Yeah.
What's your website?
It's easy. Tova Friedman Survivor.com. No capitals.
Perfect. Okay. And
my son made it for me.
Huh?
My son made it for me. So it should be easy.
I love how your family is involved in spreading the message.
They're holding me up. My entourage.
I love it. That's the best entourage to have is family, right?
Right.
And your book, The Daughter of Auschwitz, is out now.
Right.
When did it come out, on the 7th, on your birthday, or when did it come out?
The 6th, the day before my birthday.
The day before your birthday. Okay. The Daughter of Auschwitz. It is a beautiful, poignant, tragic but necessary story. And it really, like I said, it's not just a book, it's a journey. So people absolutely must read it. And Tova, I want to thank you so much. This has meant the world to me, truly.
Thank you. You're great. Really good.
Thank you. Thank you. Likewise. So take care. Best of luck with the book. And this was a joy.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was the completion of my two-parter interview with Ms. Tova Friedman, now one of my favorite human beings to have ever walked the earth. I am in such awe of this woman, and I will tell you, we're both Virgos. So Tova's a Virgo, I'm a Virgo. Her birthday is September 7th. She just turned 84. My birthday is September 12th. I just turned 48. And this was my birthday gift. If there was nothing else for my birthday, this was the greatest gift because I got to actually shoot this interview. I forget if it was on my birthday or a couple of days before my birthday. And my God, what a gift. I hope you guys felt the same. Don't forget to leave me a comment, leave me a review, subscribe to the podcast, follow me on Instagram. You can find me at The Allison Kugel. That's The Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, Kugel, K-U-G-E-L. And I will catch you guys on the next go around. Peace.